session number 6104, reel 4.
Colonel Truscott, tape 4.
He had climbed to the crow's nest and was the last one to leave the ship. And of course that was absolute nonsense. People were being drowned and killed in the ship itself as she went down.
Were any British soldiers permitted to talk to the reporters?
One or two were selected to report, yes.
What sort of things were they allowed to say?
They were asked questions about the event and so on. And, for instance, they said that they didn't... we were sunk by an American... by a submarine, and the answer from the Japanese journalist was, yes, it was an American submarine who deliberately came out to sink you. They knew that the boat was carrying British, and it was their ambition in life to sink the ship. Propaganda rubbish like that.
And nobody took any notice?
No.
What sort of trains were you transferred to?
We were transferred to, strangely enough, and we were most surprised, to a proper civilian train, not cattle trucks. We had seats and so on. We were on the scene and we were shipped off. On the way we had bentos, which is a Japanese rice package with some pickled daikon, pickled pickles and so on. And our treatment was very much better. And we felt that things were going to improve. As it happened, things did improve, because I do not think that the Japanese army at home were, shall I say, practiced their beastliness as they did when they were overseas. There was a saying that a Jap away from home knows no shame. Conditions were proving better.
Where did the train stop on the journey?
It stopped at various places up the way. We went to Osaka in the first place. And we passed through Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Hiroshima, and places like that.
Were you dropping off drafts of men, I think, from these places?
They would take off so many men, you see, and at each place, where there was a requirement for X number. Don't forget, we had our numbers now were down from 2,000 prisoners of war. We were now about 450 survivors. The rest had been drowned.
How long were you on the train for?
For one day.
Where did you end up?
In Osaka. Taken to a camp at the side of the docks. It was destined to be used as a home or a camp for Korean workers. And suddenly it diverted to use for us.
And when you arrived there, what was the first thing that happened to you?
Administration. Photographed, documented, and what have you. And we just hung around for a few days until they were able to formulate the areas where we're going to work, and after about a week we went out to work on the docksides and so on.
Were you given any propaganda talks during that period, that initial period?
Propaganda was available all the time about the great Japanese nation and its co-prosperity sphere that had extended now, and they were knocking on the gates of India, taken Malaysia, Philippines, Borneo, They were, Australia was the next place to go, India was going to go. And it was quite demoralising for us, really, because the Germans were knocking on the gates of Cairo, practically.
According to the Japanese?
No, that was a fact, wasn't it? I mean, Montgomery hadn't started to push by then.
How did you know that they were so far advanced?
Who, the...
The Germans.
Germans. The Japanese would tell you, they'd, with their broken English, would tell you that the Rommel was doing very well. He'd now, just outside Alexandria and so on, Benghazi had fallen, where the British had maintained a stand at Benghazi and so on. And but after a while, one or two people could read Hiragana, which is the Japanese nouns, made a study of the language, of the written language, and then you could, the nouns would be in the Hiragana or Katakana, and you'd be able to say where the war was being fought, you'd be able to decipher where the war was being fought.
Were you given a propaganda lecture? I think you mentioned that you had lectures last time.
Yes, you did have lectures, but they were not, they were sit down and listen. No, there was propaganda indoctrination, no.
How was it conducted then?
Well, for the camp commandant or an officer on a roll call at night, well, the camp commandant would assemble you and tell you about the divine Japanese nation and their ambitions in life and so on.
What sort of reception would he get?
Stunned silence, you know, I mean, you just did not stand up and shout that there was so much stuff and nonsense. You'd have got thumped stupid.
What was your daily work?
Working on the docks, in cement foundries, iron factories and so on. And you went out daily, you left the camp at 7 and you were back at 6 at night.
And what were you doing yourself?
I had attended mostly on the docks, working on the docks, and I attended the cement factory and attended the iron foundry and other places.
How did you get to work?
Walked. Or, if it was a fair way away, 5 miles away, they would you would mount a tram or something like that, and a tram would come along, it would be empty, and for the prisoners of war it would be ordered, and you'd get on the tram and off you'd go.
And what, you were a stevedore, were you, or something?
Stevedores, yes, on the docksides. Emptying anything, pig iron from the boats and so on. Food, and if you were on food, well, you took some back with you, and ran the risk of being found with it at the camp entrance where you were searched.
How did you conceal it?
You concealed it on your body in loot bags, what we called loot bags, a crutch bag, or bags under your arms, or around your neck, or a bag that sat on your head, you see, and you were searched by the Japanese guard outside. And if you were caught, then the usual punishment that you received a thorough sound beating. You were knocked over, you were kicked, and so on. But you ran that risk.
And what sort of food did you manage to escape with?
Well, sugar, some rice, beans, anything you get your hands on. Became the world's best thieves.
Were you very closely supervised when you were working by the Japanese?
Fairly, yes, because you always had your own Japanese guard with you who came from the camp. He was responsible for you, and he would supervise you. But the Japanese workers around you would also tell you what you had to do and so on.
So you mixed freely with the Japanese workers?
With the Japanese workers, yes. Only with the regular workers. If you were on a regular routine work, you got to know certain people and you found them, that they were human after all, and you struck up a relationship with them whereby they would smuggle you a tangerine or something like that, or give you an apple. Some of them are human.
Were they in any way discouraged from mixing with you?
They were warned not to get too friendly, yes.
Did any other form of pilfering take place?
You pilfered wherever you could, wherever it was profitable, and brought it back to the camp, and you ran the risk of being found.
What other things did you manage to pilfer? Can you remember anything?
Alcohol. We worked on alcohol one day and brought it back in our water bottles. Certainly sugar, rice, beans. One day we took a large salmon, fresh salmon out of the ship's icebox and brought it back to camp. And we were searched before we left the ship because they lost the salmon. And lost it at midday, and the cook came along to the icebox and couldn't find the salmon. He went back to the captain, reported this, and the captain then went back to the captain, told him that it's in a small boat, told the captain the salmon wasn't there. And the captain then appealed to our prisoner of war guard, who then said, you know, come on, you fellows, where is it? And we didn't know what he was talking about. We were searched that night before we came off the boat, which is not normal. You were normally searched outside the camp and not at the boat. So they were determined to find the salmon. And of course, they couldn't find it because the particular person that had it switched places after a row was searched, you see. And on the way back from camp, it was rather strange because as we were walking along the street, so the salmon sagged out of somebody's trousers that had become loose, you see. Anyway, they managed to straighten it up, and we got back into the camp with this large salmon, and so it was salmon that evening.
Did you get into trouble at any stage for pilfering?
Oh, you're in trouble if you're caught, yes, all the time.
Did you personally get into?
Yes, I was slapped. I personally, near the end, before the war ended, I organised a raiding party with two other people, and we swam a canal from a working party, and we got into a warehouse. And we brought out of this warehouse some boxes because it was getting near towards, well, this was late, shall I say, all right, spring 45, and we had a feeling that the war was going to come to a close, and what we wanted to do was to get some boxes of stuff, hide it, and then stay with that food for when the invasion came about, invasion of the Japanese mainland. Anyway, we got these boxes out, and we were seen from the seaward side of the harbour by some sailors on a merchant marine there who sent a boat after us. We'd got these boxes tied under a log, and we're pushing the log, and we just entered the canal, and this boat came along. We tipped the boxes off their rope holds, and we then swam away from the area after being hit with their rods. They were lashing at us, and we got back to the camp. That night, there was no food served that evening because the Kempeitai, this is the dreaded Japanese military police, had arrived at the camp. There was no food served that night in the camp because the Kempeitai had said they wanted the people that had made this raid on this warehouse. And the British sergeant major said, well, it's up to you, he said, but there'd be no food. No food for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days until these people give themselves up. So rather than have our people suffer, my friend and I said, right, all right, we'll give ourselves up. The third man who was with us would not. So the two of us went down to, were taken out of the camp and to the commandant's office. To cut a long story short, I thought we were going to be taken away and put in prison or shot. But the sergeant, the camp sergeant, I remember his name, Buckteeth, and I held him in high regard after that, said to the Japanese Kempeitai, these two people have given themselves up. If you let me deal with them, that'll be the end of the story. I'll see they're suitably punished. And the Kempeitai left. The Japanese sergeant then said, now you're going to punish each other for leaving the working party. And we had to stand and hit each other as the normal administered Japanese punishment when one soldier hits another soldier for indiscipline. And when that was finished, and we were at that for about half an hour, striking each other, he then took over and struck us individually, both of us, and shouted at us, and so on. And at the end of all that, they got our prison documents out and read mine out to me. Fortunately, mine were all right, but my friend's prison documents weren't all that very good. It said that he was a truculent fellow and so on. So he got another hammering for his records. And the Japanese sergeant then said, right, back into camp. They were absolutely surprised that we'd be allowed to go.
Did you hit each other very hard? I mean, it must be quite difficult to hit your friend.
Well, I didn't at first. You see, the normal method of punishment is that you keep your heels together and you then receive the flat of the hand delivered from the other person whose hand is way back, about a yard away. That way, left and then right, you see. Or the knuckles could be flattened and so on. I was smacking my friend's face, more or less giving him little taps, you see, and I was pushed out of the way by the sergeant, who said, this is the way you do it, and he administered a couple of good hefty whacks. And my friend said to me, for heaven's sake, if you're going to hit me, hit me. I don't want him doing it, you see. We were allowed back into camp then, and that was the end of the story. Other people that had been caught doing that, and I think this was a sign of the times, were court-martialed, and two that were released after the war had been sent to prison and had indeed lived with Japanese communists in a civilian prison for 3 years.
Did the officers do work?
No. Eventually We were bombed out of three camps when the bombing started in early 1945, because they brought the weight of the Allied air forces into the Pacific, and the raids on Japan mainland started properly. And we'd been bombed out of three camps and lost people in these bombings, and they'd moved the officers away.
And you were paid for the work?
Yes, 3 halfpence a day.
What could you do with that money?
Buy one packet of toothpaste at the end of the month. We had a canteen which sold toothpaste and things like that. Rubbish. Vitamin pills and things like that.
Could you afford the vitamin pills?
No.
Did you receive Red Cross parcels?
One. We had, for the 3 years there, I think we had one a year, and that was on Christmas Day. The first year, no, but 42, no, but 43, 44, we had, because 45 we were free, Christmas 45 we were free, so we had a Red Cross parcel at Christmas 43 and at Christmas 44. And then it was between...
What did you receive in it?
There was the usual chocolate, cocoa, tea, tin milk, and things like that, biscuits.
How long did that last, among six?
It was a Christmas treat, really.
What clothes did you wear?
Japanese soldiers' clothing.
Had you managed to de-louse them by that stage?
We first of all had Mongolian troop clothing from Shanghai, but then we were given Japanese. We were kitted out in the first week in Japan, Japanese pantaloons and puttees and boots and a hat. And to all intents and purposes, you looked like a Japanese.
What were conditions like in the camp?
very good in the camp that we went to in Osaka. It had just been fitted out and was fairly new as a Korean working camp, not a prisoner of war, but a Korean working organization camp.
So what was it, huts?
Well, they were just barrack room type things, and you slept on shelves, on tatami mats, and you each had two blankets and a pillow filled with rice husks and so on. Conditions were quite good.
And it was warm enough in winter, was it?
Oh, yes, yes.
And what was sanitation like then?
The usual Japanese deep trench latrine.
And was there much sickness?
The sickness was sorted out at the beginning because we had medical inspections as soon as we arrived, and those that were sick were taken away and put into a place we called the hospital, but it was the underneath of a sports stadium, and it was turned into a hospital for us. There were no medicines or anything like that there, but nevertheless, a Dr. Jackson, Royal Navy, Commander Jackson, he was in charge of the hospital section at this sports stadium, and he managed to do a razor blade and a couple of other. He had no instruments really at all, but he did some sterling work.
What was electric feet?
Electric feet was a form of a vitamin deficiency, and you had your feet, they were always cold, or rather. Sorry, they were. It was a form of coldness. You'd put your feet in a warm bucket of water to try and alleviate them. Indeed, one person woke up in the morning. Really, it'd been his feet were frostbitten, and he had both feet off. It's a soldier.
That was because of the coldness of the barracks, was it?
That's right, yes. It was very cold when we first went there. And indeed, Dr. Jackson took both feet off for him. And this was a terrible thing. And the man eventually came back to us. But he had his morale was wonderful, even with that disability.
Did he carry on working?
Oh, he couldn't. Mm. No false limbs or anything like that.
How much food did you get a day?
Two bowls of rice a day, one in the morning, one at night, with some vegetable soup. Once a week you may have a slither of meat, which is about as long and as thick as your index finger. And one night you might have a piece of fish, again, which was as big as your index finger. And the next night you would have fish powder, dried fish powder on your rice, and some pickled daikon. But again, the inevitable bowl of soup.
Did you eat in your sleeping quarters?
Yes, yes.
Were you supervised when you were eating?
Oh, no.
So if you'd pilfered some food, you could freely augment your meal with that food?
Well, if you pilfered food, you then took it along to the kitchen, which was run by British cooks. And they cooked it for you. You were able to go along there and say, well, here's £2 of rice, will you? Give me £2 of cooked rice in exchange, and you'd share that out.
Did anyone try to escape?
No. No. Only about a week before the war actually ended, we had two people brought into this camp. They were American officers who had tried to escape from their camp nearby. And they were picked up by the Japanese, brought in, and they were waiting court-martial. And they were able to tell us that when they weren't being watched, they were tied to a log in front of the Japanese guardroom. We were able to glean that they'd heard that the American Navy was operating off Japan, and they were going to find a boat and sail off and meet the American Navy. A very foolhardy thing. They were caught. And they really would have been court-martialed and executed.
How long did they spend tied to the log?
For a week. But then the second atomic bomb was dropped, and we witnessed the Japanese commandant ordering their release and telling them that they were released by orders of the emperor and that no charges would be made against them. We knew then that it was over.
You told me that you once refused to be photographed by the Japanese. They were trying to photograph you for propaganda purposes.
Yes, that's right.
Large, isn't
it? Yes, we were unloading a ship. It was a new ship. And an official photographer was there, and he wanted all the prisoners of war to line up with their barrows, these two-wheeled barrows, like a porter's barrow, to be photographed. And I dropped my barrow, and I moved out of line, and I said, I'm not going to be part of this propaganda scene. So they told me to pick my barrow up and get back. I refused, and they took me then off to the office. They made a few phone calls, and the next thing, the Kempeitai appeared, the Japanese military police. And they said to him that I'd refused to be photographed, you see. And he took his revolver out of his holster, put it to my head. Are you going to be photographed, or do you want me to pull this trigger? I decided that I'd be photographed, and back to the ship I went. You didn't call their bluff at all.
Were the Americans the only people that had the punishment of being tied to the log?
Yes, yes.
So in the main, the punishments were beatings?
Normal beatings, yes, which the Japanese used to administer to each other, yes. Code of discipline was very rigid and strict.
When the Americans told you that the Navy was operating off the coast of Japan, was that the first indication you had that the war was coming to an end?
Oh, no. We'd followed the war along by stages with the... One or two of our members could read the Japanese hiragana characters. And so the next thing you'd see him read McCarthy, Philippines, and so on. And so you knew where the war was going. And then the Japanese people themselves, who you worked with, would throw up their heads in horror and discuss with you how bad things were becoming. They were no longer the jubilant people who were going to stem across the world and take everything.
Your situation in regard to them must have been quite peculiar in the sense of being their prisoner and yet feeling that at any moment you might have the upper hand.
You didn't know what was going to happen, and it was indeed the atomic bombs that released us, that were our salvation. Because had the Americans invaded Japan, there had been a couple of million American lives lost. Well, the Japanese are terribly fanatical people. And there had been a lot of American lives and a lot of Japanese lives. And the dropping of the two atomic bombs did all that.
Indeed
gave us freedom.
Were you at Osaka when the first one was dropped?
Or yes.
And how did you hear about that?
Well, we were told